Hey guys, I'm Adam Rappaport, and you are listening to the Bon Appetit Foodcast. All right, this week we got a burger special for you. First up, smash burger aficionado George Motz is here to school me on how to make the crispiest, laciest, gooeyest, cheesiest, best burger ever. And then I chat with BA's own Chris Morocco about his easiest ever grilled veggie burger. But before we get started, quick thing. I want to tell you about this year's Hot 10 party here in New York City on Wednesday, October 17th. Last month, we released our list of the best new restaurants in America, and now is your chance to come party with them, like all the chefs from all 10 restaurants. There will be all sorts of good food and drink, and it's all going down at 99 Scott in Brooklyn. And you can buy your general admission and VIP tickets, if you're fancy, at BAHOT10, that's BAHOT10.com. Hope to see you there. And now, let's do this thing. George Motz. Hello. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So it's always been Motz, not Motz?
It's always been Motz, no. For a couple of days it was Motz, yeah.
All right, so I got to say, I'll be honest here. I've been hosting the show for, Emma, how long? 3.5 years now? I think this might be the most excited I've been for a guest.
Come on.
I mean, you know, we have like some famous-y sort of people, but I be able to just like talk burgers for like, and smash burgers for like a half an hour. This is very exciting for me. So before we start to nerd out on the actual process for like the perfect sort of griddled, crispy, lacy, smashed, gooey, cheesy, oniony burger, I was curious, like, how does one become like the burger guy? Like, how is that a career path?
It wasn't a career path to begin with. It was a complete accident. It was by chance that it happened this way. I got to tell you that much. It started about 18 years ago. I was looking for an idea for a documentary film, and my wife and I at the time were talking about different food subjects that had not been covered. And one was hamburgers. No one had actually touched the subject of hamburgers ever. So I started thinking about, you know, making some kind of documentary piece. I had friends at Food Network.
Were you also like, wait, how is it that no one's ever done a burger documentary?
Well, that's 18 years ago.
But and, still,
yeah,
you know.
Well, it's funny. I think it's simply because the technology had not come around yet. There was no real video technology that was affordable.
To do it affordably. Yeah. The Burns brothers were not doing the great nine-part burger documentary.
Yeah, my first two documentaries were not on food. They were shot on 16mm film. Yeah. They had to be because that's what you did back then. Or you shot on some big, bulky HD camera. I mean, it's hard to believe that only 18 years ago that we couldn't afford the technology to go and just, you know, shoot something like you can on your phone now.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody can shoot something on their phone now. It's absolutely incredible. But so it started out as a hamburger documentary. Food Network approached me. I was talking to them about doing some interstitial pieces between shows at one point, so we shot a small piece about the green chili cheeseburger at the Bobcat Bite in Santa Fe. And in the middle of the production, I looked at my wife and I said, "This is not this is way bigger than some silly little piece, you know. Let's make a real film." And we did. We ended up going and making a full size documentary film that ended up on Channel 13. It was on the Sundance Channel for a while. That ended up becoming a thing on television. It was requested. People were finding it out there on DVD. We had it out on DVD. People were finding the DVD. They were burning the DVD. Suddenly the internet was big and they were copying it and became a sort of a cult thing. It then rolled into.
It kind of reminds me of. Yeah. I imagine you've seen Heavy Metal Parking Lot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that goes back to like the VHS days.
Exactly. Yeah. People were ripping that all over the place.
But yeah.
Only way you could get it.
But,
so,
and for anyone who hasn't seen it, I would definitely recommend it. A couple of guys in the parking lot of the Capitol Center during, I want to say, the Turbo Lover tour by Judas Priest. And they had a couple of big handheld cameras just interviewing metalheads in the parking lot.
Yeah, also Police Around the World, another one, by the way. That's another great. That's a movie that the police shot, but you never really could find. It was only on VHS. You could not find it anywhere forever.
But there's this little cult network, so you had to track it down. You heard about like the burger documentary. You got to see this, man.
Yeah. So it became a book. Somebody asked me, a publisher asked me to write a book. I had no idea what I was doing. I wasn't a writer. I became a writer very fast.
So what was your, can I just say this, full disclosure, for you, like I've done no homework on you. You're like this international man of burger mystery to me, like this Motz/Motz guy who kind of looks like Wolverine from, you know, I don't know about if you have a 6-pack or 8-pack or not.
No, zero pack.
But I'm like, he's the burger guy. I'm like, how is this possible? So did you go to film school?
Did not go to film school. I got out of school. I barely graduated. I got kicked out, to be totally honest, and somehow made it back in. One of my focuses, or my major, was American history.
And this is where?
This was at Catholic U in D.C.
Oh.
I was just trying to get the
My brother graduated from Catholic U.
Oh, fantastic.
What year did you graduate?
I graduated in 1990.
Okay, that would have been about the same as my brother also.
Really?
Yeah. Andy Excellent. Rappaport, I don't know if you know him.
I don't
Theater
think I
dude.
Yeah. I was, honestly, college was a little bit of a blur. I'll be totally honest.
I would say the same for him.
I'm glad I got out of there. The point was to try to get the hell out of there and start my life. So I started working in production. Instead of going to film school, I knew I wanted to be in commercial production. Yeah. I started working with Ken Erickson in the very beginning. And I've had a love of food photography. I started working with a guy named Greg Ramsey, who is a food tabletop director.
Okay.
So I had this very, very solid base for food photography to begin with. So when I went into shooting all the hamburger stuff, it was already there.
What was your – all right, so you the idea of hamburgers as a topic kind of struck you, and obviously you're like, oh, like that's definitely a thing. America loves hamburgers. What was your hamburger experience like growing up?
My hamburger experience was limited to McDonald's, Howard Johnson's.
And you grew up where?
I grew up in Long Island.
Okay.
So unfortunately, it was limited to a lot of the fast food crap out there.
And what about at home? Did your parents grill and stuff?
Yes, my dad grilled. He made awesome hamburgers.
No, really?
No, he didn't. No. He thought they were great. And I think, they weren't bad. They just were not... they weren't requested often, put it that way. I think he tried his best. It was, A for effort, put it that way.
But that's what's so fascinating about burgers and grilling, like the leap from just like a perfectly fine burger on a grill to one that's done really well. You're like, like kind of almost the same ingredients, but just the execution takes you to this other place. You're like, oh my God, that's the best thing I've eaten all month.
But for me, it was an actual moment in time that solidified that moment. Mm-hmm. It wasn't. I wish it was in the backyard. I wish it was something that happened in my childhood, but it didn't. I was about 22 years old. I was in Los Angeles, and a friend of mine. I was late at night, and I said, "What am I going to do? I need some food. I just landed at LAX," and he said, "You should definitely, you should go to the Apple Pan on Pico."
Yeah.
And it was about midnight on a Friday night, and it was packed.
Explain the Apple Pan to people who have not been.
The Apple Pan is a place lost in time.
Yeah.
It looks like the 1940s ended, and nobody told anybody there.
They got the little paper caps.
The servers are all wearing paper caps. They're somewhat surly, but very direct, and they're
fast.
They're just trying to get you your food as fast as
and
possible.
And kind of like the S sort of U-shaped counter with the little stools.
Yeah, horseshoe counter with a bunch of stools, a bunch of red leather stools with backs on them. It's an incredible place. It's a throwback. It's evocative of a time that doesn't exist anymore, obviously, but it does if you walk into this place. And
how do you feel about the relish on the burgers there?
I'm not a big fan of anything too sweet on a burger. Yeah, I mean, the obviously the hickory burger is the burger I'd get as far as I'm concerned. There's two burgers in the menu. It's the steak burger and the hickory burger. One's a little sweeter than the other.
Yeah. Do you get the apple pie? Is there an apple pie? I don't even know.
There is an apple pie.
I'm not a pie guy.
The pie is fantastic there.
So it is.
So good. Well, the pie to get there, I think, is the banana cream pie.
Oh, okay.
And since they know me, or anybody who I guess is a regular when they walk in, they always say to you, "Would you like pie?" And that doesn't mean, "Would you like pie now?" That means, "Would you like me to save you a slice in case they run out by the time you finish your burger?"
You know what else I love about that place? There's a lot of funny little quirks like that. When you order the Coke, it comes in one of those little paper cone cups that then sits in a metal cone stand.
It used to be red plastic.
Oh.
I'm assuming all through the 60s and 70s and 80s, it was 90s, it was red plastic. But people started stealing them as a keepsake. And they couldn't find them anymore. So one day I walked in there, and they actually had a styrofoam cup. They gave me I always get milk when I go there. I get whole milk when I go there. I don't know why. And they served me milk in a styrofoam cup. And I said, "What the hell is going on here?" And they said, "Well, no, we ran out, blah, blah, blah," and told me the whole story. About a month later, I went back, and they suddenly had those metal ones, those metal holders with the paper insert. And apparently Todd Field, the director, was as appalled as I was. And he found a way. He pulled a bunch of his friends together, and they went out and they found a bunch of those things at yard sales and eBay, I think.
Oh, wow.
And gave them to him for free.
As the burger guy, you know this stuff.
Todd Field is an American hero.
Okay, so all right, so you've got this hankering for burgers. It starts to become a thing. You make the documentary. The book comes out, and at that point, like, is this a career? Is this like a hobby? Like, at what point, were you able to segue to like, oh no, this is my job?
It was almost like a second personality. I was like a dual personality. What? Not so much a career. I mean, it was becoming a career, but I wasn't getting really paid for it at all. I'm getting paid for it a lot now, which is nice, I gotta say. But back then, I mean, we're talking 13, 14 years ago, I was not being paid for this stuff. A little bit of money for the book here and there, but it was more of a novelty for me to be able to get a phone call from CNN and say, "We need a hamburger expert. You are the hamburger expert." And then I would go and talk about, whatever I knew, whatever questions they had about hamburgers.
So were you making a living doing basic sort of video film production work and whatnot?
Yeah, which I still do. I still shoot TV commercials and movies and TV shows and that sort of thing. I mostly focus now on just food production, food film production for businesses.
All right. And then if you follow George on Instagram, which I highly recommend you do, if you're okay with getting really hungry at any time of day, it now seems like you've segued. You're doing events. You've got the Smashula. You're sort of incorporating, as one does these days, like, you know, and making a business of being you.
It's a good time to be in the hamburger world, especially for me. I'll be totally honest. It's become very popular, but it's hard. Not just popular is not a good word. I think it's actually there's something happening. There's a movement happening, and not just in this country. It's actually become even bigger internationally. Mm. I mean, just this week alone, I've gotten requests to go and cook in Paris, in Osaka. Last week we were talking about the Bahamas and somebody.
Paris and Osaka. Who's requesting that you come there?
Great question. So I'm also going to Brazil again, probably next month, I think, at this point. So I'm going to two different cities. I'm going to Rio. I'm going to Sao Paulo. And I'm also going to a third city, Vitória, I think. I'm not sure. So it depends. A lot of times they're just fans. They're fans that happen to have restaurants. And they pull together money or resources or sponsors or something. And they fly me over.
Kind of do like a pop-up event.
Exactly.
So like in Paris, like who wants you to come to Paris?
I don't want to give names right now because the deal's not struck, but it's a very well-known Parisian American style cafe.
Okay,
that's new, young, and hip, and they're very excited about it. We'll see.
So one of those places
right
like Clown Bar or something. One of those
can't
types of joints.
Can't tell you. until we close the deal.
And then what about in Osaka?
Osaka, we're actually talking. We're working with a friend of ours who is from Los Angeles, who's now living in Tokyo, about doing the food film fest there.
Okay.
And as part of the food film fest, we would do a pop up hamburger pop up with me.
All right. So let's take Paris. Let's take at this mystery restaurant. You're going to go over there. You're going to make burgers for a night, and they're going to sell tickets or whatever. I assume you have to bring all your ingredients with you. Like, you're not going to trust that Parisian ground beef, are you?
That's a good question. We're trying to cross that bridge right now.
Are you allowed to bring, like?
There's certain things I can bring. For example, I will definitely bring American cheese because you really can't find American cheese, good American cheese, anywhere else in the world. I mean, that's sort of
go figure.
Conclusion.
Right? Yeah.
Go figure, right. And I brought half a kilo, which is a 5-pound block, of American cheese to Brazil last year. And a friend of mine actually walked around his restaurant and giving out little pieces of American cheese like it was lardon at Vitaly's restaurants, you know?
Yeah. Do you bring the buns?
I usually work with the local baker
and
try to get as close as we can to an American bun. In most cases, like in Brazil right now, they're actually pretty close. They have a lot of buns that actually work
pretty well.
Really well, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the burger. So how do you describe the burger that you make? If someone says you're sitting on a plane, like, oh, you make burger, how do you like to make your burger? Like, what's your basic description? I mean, I know, but I'm curious how you describe it.
Number one is fresh ground beef. Mm-hmm. It has to be fresh ground beef. Not necessarily ground by you. In fact, it's probably better if it's ground by a butcher or ground by, you know, a large-scale meatpacking plant that knows how to actually grind and create consistency. You know, I work with a meatpacker in New Jersey, and what they do is they grind, you know, 60,000, 70,000 pounds a day for the restaurants, and that's where I want to be. I want to be in a place where they're actually grinding a lot of beef because it's always the exact
fresh.
It's always consistent. It's always exactly 80-20 if I want 80-20.
So, and 80-20 being 80% lean, 20% fat.
Exactly, yeah, which is an ideal blend for making burgers. It's sort of foolproof. You can't really screw up 80-20 beef if you're cooking, no matter what. If you're grilling it, if you're having a flat top or whatever, it's almost impossible to screw it up.
But like when you go to the grocery store and you see that 90% lean, stay away from that,
no,
right?
No. Yeah, it's like it's easy to ruin that. It's actually really easy to screw that up.
Now, are you obviously right? These days, there's a lot of like at the restaurants, they do like the, you know, the brisket, short rib, this, that, like hybrid. Are you just like a ground chuck guy, or what's your preference for?
Oh, it's in terms of a blend. I mean, you know, it's funny. I tell people that, you know, when you think about those blends, if you actually say the blend out loud and then you look at an actual diagram of a cow, I mean, those parts are not very far apart.
Yeah.
There's really no difference. It's not like you're using something from one end of the animal and then from the other end of the animal. I mean, the chuck, the short rib, the brisket, those are all within the same part of the animal.
Yeah.
You know, obviously one is the chuck is in the top part of the shoulder and the brisket's underneath the shoulder, but they're all so close that it really doesn't make a difference, honestly. I think it doesn't make a difference personally. And if you're grinding it up and cooking it in a burger, I'm sorry, it's not going to make a difference. You know, there was a trend to make these Kobe beef burgers. Mm-hmm. It was ridiculous because it didn't. There was no real. Once you grind up Kobe beef, I don't think the flavor. Really, you're talking about tasting the fat. That's about it.
And the texture is gone.
Gone, totally gone.
Although I will say the one thing, like which I do think is interesting, and if you like at Manetta Tavern with the Black Label Burger, and at Luger's, if they do take like the dry aged beef and grind it, I do think you taste that dry aged funkiness.
It's apples and oranges. It's very different because dry aging does impart incredible amounts of flavor, intense flavor.
All right, so you got this good 80-20 beef, freshly ground. What's my next step?
Next step is to, I like to cook it on a flat top in a pan of some sort.
So a flat top like a griddle or a cast iron skillet.
Exactly, yeah. I can cook on a flame, I can deep fry, I can steam, I can poach, I can do whatever I want. I've learned all these methods from all over the country.
Say, most people didn't even know you were allowed to do that, but okay. We'll get to that. So we're keeping the Moats burger, though. Sorry. So you got a flat top griddle, like on Happy Days or something.
Yeah. Keep it small, not too big. You know, people think, oh, you got to make a big ass burger. No, this is not. Burgers should be a small affair. They should not be. And I defer to the classics. I defer to the people that have been making burgers for 120 years or so, almost 120 years at this point. What are those burgers? And they are very small, you know, rolled or scooped balls of beef that have been put onto a flat top, smashed, and then, you know, obviously with very little ingredients. We're talking about, you know, maybe salt.
Okay, so then about how many ounces?
My ideal size is roughly 275 to 3.2, somewhere. 3.25, somewhere in there.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're not even a quarter pound.
Right.
So the quarter pounders that we grew up with, you're still an ounce shy of that.
Exactly, right. And actually, honestly, I have to tell you, I prefer to take two small, you know, 2 ounce smashed patties and put them together and make a double.
All right, so you grab a handful. You can probably guesstimate at this point. You've done it enough. And so you grab it. Do you form a ball or do you just put it right on the griddle and then smash it down with the back of a spatula?
What I use is a salad scoop or a salad dish. They're called dishers, or sometimes they call them ice cream scoops. It's the one with the little trigger on the side.
Oh, really?
They're designed for portioning salads, for portioning
tuna salad.
Exactly.
Yeah, like your grandmother used to eat at the deli.
Yeah. So if you buy one of those for $5, whatever they cost, that's the best way to make consistently great burgers that are always exactly the same.
So what size are you supposed to buy?
It depends on all depends on the size of bun you're using, how fast you want it to cook. Because a lot of you're making doubles, you're making singles.
Okay, so you got your scoop. Yep. You plop it out onto the griddle. That if you have a nicely seasoned cast iron skillet or something, you don't probably need oil in there, right? If you're using 80-20?
No, what I actually do this is a new thing I learned recently, to actually prep and season a griddle, what I do is I take a ball of beef and just smear it on top of the surface. And let that cook, almost chop it up like you've got chopped beef on there. Oh. And let it really, really cook out so all the fat comes out of it. So it's almost like dry pebbles.
And then throw that away and then
throw it
use
out.
It.
And you look down and you have this absolutely perfectly seasoned griddle instantly.
All right, so seasoned griddle. You plop the thing on and then you take a nice firm spatula?
Yes, you try to find the heaviest spatula you can find. Yeah. Which, of course, I could not find for years. And I have friends that were complaining they were breaking them all the time. But because in this method, you have to actually use force and either, come down. Down it hard, whack it hard,
like a judge hitting the gavel.
It's exactly the same thing. It is literally the exact same thing. Think gavel.
and you're literally smashing the burger. Yeah. You're not trying to keep it perfectly round or anything.
No, well, round. If you're using a portion scoop,
it'll be perfectly round. Yeah, but the edges are not going to be perfectly round. They're not going to be. They'll be a little craggy and whatnot.
They will be. And there's a method I learned from one of Danny Meyer's favorite restaurants in St. Louis called Carl's. Carl's Drive-In they do something we just learned recently called the lacy edged burgers that exist mostly in the center of Illinois.
Yeah.
And the idea is that you smash it thin in one or two big hits, and then you push off to the side almost like painting with plastering.
Right. So you kind of smear it a little bit on the griddle.
A little bit of a smear.
And then do you add the salt?
So I put the salt first. A ball of beef, salt, smash.
Yeah. Okay. So here's my question. So it's sizzling away in its own fat. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but I feel like the majority of the browning and crispiness is going to happen on one side. And then when you flip it over, you're not going to cook it for as long because by the time that one side is nice and crispy and well-browned, the other side just needs a little bit of time on. Is that correct? Or what's your timing ratio from side to side?
Again, it all depends on how much beef you're using, but it's very fast.
Yeah.
You know, it's a visual thing. I usually have to, a friend of mine that's certified Angus beef likes to say that you have to watch it and it'll speak to you.
Well, it's like a pancake where you see the top, like a pancake starts to bubble.
Exactly.
Like that red raw meat on the top will start to sort of turn opaque and get some bubbles and whatnot.
Right. And with the smash burger, the edges start to crisp a little bit.
Yeah.
And when they start to crisp and you start to see some of the actual, it's very fast. It all happens very fast.
Well, give me some specific. Like how fast? Like on a 3 ounce patty, you smash it down there.
1 minute.
1 minute?
Yeah, if you're cooking at 400 degrees, you're looking at about a minute, yeah.
And then you flip it over?
Minute and a half, but I would do more than that. You know? Okay. And I make a lot of onion burgers.
So, all right. So you're getting the crispy thing, seasoned skillet, salt, that's all you need. You're not packing it tight or anything.
No, you're
not seasoning it beforehand.
Nope.
I've noticed you, on the Insta, you're doing this shaved onion thing, but you're not cooking the onion separately on the side like a lot of people would do. So explain the onion burger.
The trick to the onion, and I'll tell everybody out there, is it has to be Vidalia.
Okay.
Vidalia is clutch. You can't use any other onions.
Sweet.
I've seen people try it. Yeah, sweet. It caramelizes very fast because it has all the sugar, obviously the highest sugar content. You can also use Spanish onion if you can't find Vidalia.
Yeah.
In the West Coast, it's Walla Walla. Yep. In Texas, it's called Texas Sweet.
But you want a sweet onion.
Sweet onion. Big, big sweet onion. And also, it has to be cut super thin so it cooks fast. That's very important.
So like if you have like a mandolin or something.
Mandolin's great. Please watch your fingers. I tell people, everybody I know who's gone out and bought a mandolin has missed a few.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, so you have super shaved thin onions. So what do you do with them? You got the burger, you smash the burger, then you put the onions on top of the burger?
No, what I do what they do in Oklahoma.
Okay.
This is actually specifically is the Oklahoma fried onion burger.
Okay.
It's big in central, western, and southern Oklahoma. And in fact, if you walk into a restaurant in any of those places in Oklahoma and you ask for a hamburger, you're going to get onions smashed into it. A lot of them, too, as you've seen from the Instagram.
You're like a burger anthropologist.
I've been called a burger scholar is my latest one. Yep. The anthropology of burgers, exactly. I do have, it's all in my head too. It's all, and then the book.
Okay, sorry. So what do you do? So you got your shaved onions, super thin.
I also use a deli slicer.
Okay.
It's a bit of a cheat.
No,
but I have a deli slicer.
But you're also doing big events for a lot of people. You need piles of razor thin onions. All right, so you got your onions. I got my burger. What am I doing?
Okay, so once you have the ball sitting on the flat top, the next thing I do is I take a wad of onions the same size as the ball.
Okay.
So that's the part people screw up also is that it has to be almost the exact same volume.
Okay.
And I gently press that with my fingertips into the ball.
Okay.
And then smash it.
And then smash it.
Yeah.
And you salt the beef first and then put the onions on,
right?
Yeah,
so it's ball of beef, salt, onion.
Onion sort of nestled in there and you smush it all together.
Yeah, fast.
And sorry, so then smash it all together so that one side for a minute or two, depending on the temperature, your griddle till it gets nice and crispy.
Yep.
And then you flip it over.
Cheese on flip.
Yeah, you flip it over, then you put the cheese on top, and so the onions are on the bottom.
Yes, exactly. So they're cooking now.
And when they're on top, they're sort of getting warm and fatty and sort of softening.
They're starting to soften.
Before the flip.
They're starting to render, which is very important. And burger itself, you have three elements. You have the fat rendering out.
You getting all this, Emma? Yeah. You didn't know this. You thought you just like, you're just eating a burger, not even like thinking about it.
In this case, the onions are now rendering out.
Yeah.
And whenever you turn
it over,
they're
losing some water and stuff. And
they're, well, it's actually going, all that flavor is going into.
The steam and stuff, okay.
Yeah.
So then you flip it over, you put the slice of American cheese on top, and then you need the onions. How long are they cooking for underneath then?
Again, another 30 seconds, 40 seconds.
Because they're so thin.
So thin.
They don't, and so at that, when you take them off, do they take on color at that point? Are they kind of translucent, or how done are they?
Half and half.
Half
depends,
and half. But they're not super caramelized because they haven't had time to get like really caramelized.
Right. In the Midwest, in Oklahoma specifically, they don't cook the burgers for longer than I do. I cook at a higher temperature. I believe I've actually created my own method, I think.
Yeah.
I've taken, this American method, this famous American method, the Oklahoma fried onion burger, and turned it into something that's my own, I think. You know?
Okay. All right. So that sounds delicious. I got my caramelly onions on the bottom.
Now I'm hungry.
I got the melted cheese on top. You don't put a dome on or anything, right?
No.
You just let the cheese melt. Okay.
Well, there's another step you're missing.
No, but there's a step thing where you put the bun, you stack the buns on top of the burger while they're on the griddle, but there's one facing one way and then the other one. And like, all right, this gets confusing. And I've watched that video over at like, what is it, White Manna or whatever in Jersey, one of the burger places where they've got the buns on top and they're flipping and they're, I'm like, I literally have to like slow down and watch it in slow motion to get how they do the flip and where each burger bun goes. So explain this to us.
Exactly right. So this is an old-time American method to actually not toast the buns, but to have them what we call ride. They actually sit on top of the cooking patty once it's been flipped over.
Okay, so all right. So you take the bottom portion of the bun.
The heel.
The heel. Good Lord, I'm learning so much. So you're putting that on top of the burger where the cheese is?
No, you're actually putting the crown on the cheese.
Oh, my God.
So the cheese is, you want to have the cheese on the top of the burger.
Okay. Oh, so the crown goes first on top of the cheese, and then you put the heel on top of that.
Yeah.
And then when you're ready, then you slide the spatula under the burger where the onions have now caramelized.
Right.
And you take the top off the top.
It goes
and then
under the spatula.
It goes under the spatula, and you slide the spatula, and you pinch it.
Exactly.
Wow.
It's exciting.
And you can now do this like wham, bam, wham, wham, wham.
I do it 500 times a day. Literally, for burgers. I just cooked a smorgasburg in Los Angeles. I'm cooking a smorgasburg again in July.
God, I'm hungry. okay, we're going to get to lightning round, and that's a lot of either or questions, burger related. But a couple of other questions before we get there. Talk about the Smashula.
Smashula.
Yeah.
Smashula is a spatula that I developed with a friend of mine, Will Shear, who's a kitchen designer. Mm-hmm. Commercial kitchens, and we were trying to find a fabricator that could actually make the world's greatest smashing spatula. And people use the channel smashers, which have I think Five Guys uses them, and my friends at Shake Shack and Hard Time Sundays.
That's like kind of the handle with like the rectangle of steel underneath it that you just push straight down.
And it has a little channel so that you can never actually over smash the burger.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah,
I want to be able to over smash the burger.
And also, you can't slide and pick it up with that.
Exactly. So it's basically a one-shot deal. Yeah. But with the Smashula, it weighs a pound. It's one pound of custom-cut stainless steel, 12-gauge stainless steel. It's bent.
Offset, so the bottom sort
It's a nice sharp edge on it.
Because some of those ones, like I have one from Wusthof, which isn't bad, although it's a little narrow, but sometimes as you push down, it begins to bend. It begins to give.
Yeah, this does not give at all.
Yeah.
You cannot bend this thing. It's almost impossible.
It's like you were talking about plaster and stuff, like spackling or whatever. It's all right. So you're smashing it down, and then you can also use it to scoop it up.
You can have a bunch of burgers on a griddle that are at different stages, and you can smash a few, flip a few, and it's all one tool. And you want to be able to do that because you want to have the tool in one hand and have a clean hand for loading fresh beef. You don't want to have one tool in each hand.
And also the buns and the flip. Let me see this.
Yeah.
George Motes. Can one buy the Smashula?
Yes, you can. There's a little bit of a wait right now, but
how is there a wait? How hard can it be to make these things? There's like who's making these by hand?
We have a shop in Brooklyn. I can't tell you where it is, but we're doing 12 at a time.
Nothing gets done fast in Brooklyn. If you want to do the whole artisanal thing and like charge $92 for a spatula, all right. Okay, well, I'm looking forward to getting a Smashula because that makes me very excited. Couple more questions. What's it with patty melts? Do you like patty melts?
I like patty melts. You know, patty melt is the best of a grilled cheese and a cheeseburger put together. That's very important.
But you still have to like make the burger and then put it inside the thing and then does a burger kind of lose some of its?
No, I mean, I think it's actually still a burger. I mean, a burger is basically a sandwich. And so what is a patty melt but a further version of a hamburger sandwich, you know? And it's original, by the way. I mean, if you go to Louis' Lunch, they serve it on
Connecticut.
Toast.
But they don't griddle it, though, do they?
They don't.
No.
No.
Do you have a favorite, like, fancy restaurant burger?
Ooh, I don't like to play favorites, but I have a couple. I absolutely love the burger at Beatrice Inn. Edgy Mar has a burger that is
here in the West Village.
Off the hook, it's a dry aged beef burger. It's almost prohibitively expensive, but I can tell you right now, it's worth every penny.
Okay,
I like the regular cheeseburger at Mneta, not the Black Label, but the regular cheeseburger is also spectacular. Okay. I love those too. Where else? Valcuz. I mean, there's a bunch. I mean, there's a bunch. There are a lot of really good high end burgers out there. You know.
Okay, we're gonna do lightning round now. Okay. Either or questions. That you've have to answer. All right. Shredded iceberg or whole leaf iceberg?
Ooh, that's easy. Shredded.
Do you do that on your deli slicer?
No, I do that by hand. That's easy.
Oh, by hand. Dukes or Hellman's?
To me, honestly, people are going to hate to hear this. I think they're too similar to even pick one. I'm a big fan of Hellman's. I grew up with Hellman's. I'm a huge fan of Hellman's. Yeah.
Do you do mayo on a burger?
Love mayo on a burger.
Yeah.
Mayo is a great element for everything. I mean, I go to Brazil.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The Brazilians are also crazy about mayo.
And the Italians, weirdly, you don't think so, but they have a lot of these weird little salads like in their fancy tea salons have mayo.
I stood up in front of a crowd in Brazil, and I told them that I would eat mayo with a spoon, and there was a standing ovation. True story.
Coke or Diet Coke?
Oh, definitely Coke. I can't go for that fake crap. Keep it real.
Dill or sweet?
Definitely dill.
Yeah.
You have to have the acidic bite of dill, the acidic bite of vinegar, but when you eat a burger. But I think it has to have go in the direction of dill.
Yeah. I don't understand the sweet pickle
either
thing.
Either do I.
Single or double?
That depends. But I can tell you right now, for my money, I think probably a smaller size double is the way to go.
Each one gets a slice of cheese?
You get two slices of cheese. You also get four caramelized sides as opposed to two.
That's why. Yeah. Damn, I like where we're going with this. All right, taking you back to your childhood, Big Mac or Quarter Pounder with cheese?
Neither. But I would say probably Big Mac.
What did you, growing up, what was your order?
Big Mac was the, I grew up Big Mac, yeah.
I'm just going to throw this one out there. I have no idea if you're going to answer either, but Misfits or Bad Brains?
Ooh, wow. Definitely Misfits.
as a sort of New York, New Jersey guy.
Yeah.
Chocolate, strawberry, or vanilla?
I mean, unquestionably chocolate.
Chocolate shake, always.
I'm a chocolate addict, yeah.
Are you like a, is it a black and white when you get the, what's it called when you get the vanilla ice cream with the chocolate syrup?
That's a black and white, yeah. I'm not a big fan of that.
Oh, you're not?
I'd rather do chocolate with chocolate syrup. Yeah.
Oh,
or even better,
okay.
Coffee ice cream with chocolate syrup.
You know what I like a lot? I like the vanilla ice cream with a shot of espresso. Do you ever do that?
Affogato. Yeah. I do it.
But no, but I mean, as a shake.
And I love it.
I love that.
Iced coffee. With vanilla and chocolate ice cream in it. That's my latest thing.
I was in visiting friends this weekend. They're like, they live up in Connecticut. And Brandon, my friend, it was 11 a.m. I guess we were watching the World Cup or whatever. He had made a cup of coffee with like his AeroPress and everything. They just went into the fridge, grabbed a thing of like salted caramel ice cream, just put a whole scoop of that. I'm like, what are you doing? Sunday morning. I didn't know that was legal.
Why not?
Waffle fries or cottage fries?
Well, it's fun. Here's a true story. I actually don't like fries.
What?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
What?
And it's very un-American to not like French
fries. What do you mean you don't like French fries?
To me, I'd rather have two burgers than have like waste space on a fry.
Yeah.
I mean, French fries are easy to screw up, as far as I'm concerned. Nothing worse to me than a cold French fry.
The ugly truth about French fries is people get wrong. They always think, oh, man, they're homemade French fries. Homemade French fries are usually not well done.
Yeah.
There's so much margin for error in a homemade French fry.
Whereas so much.
The freshly fried frozen ones, like at McDonald's or Shake Shack or anything, are always going to be better.
Put it this way. I think that the French fry is more a letdown than it is a pleasure. You know,
my problem is I have a French fry weakness, and I can't stop eating them.
Feel like you like cottage fries then.
Yeah, I love the cottage fries like at J.G. Mellon's uptown.
Love them. They actually tried to take them off the menu once, and there was almost a revolt.
There should have been.
Yeah, there was. They brought out straight.
That's like taking beer off the menu at a bar.
People were not happy.
Ranch or special sauce?
Ooh, I'm partial to ranch.
I love ranch. Side of ranch is like, that's, everything is better. Life is better with a side of ranch.
Couldn't agree more.
All right, last question, which we always ask everyone. Butter or olive oil?
Oh, well, I mean, that's an easy answer. Butter.
Yeah, I thought so.
I mean, I love olive oil. I mean, olive oil has its place.
Its place.
It really does. But butter, I think butter is an unsung hero.
George Mutz, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks to George Mutz. And now on to Veggie Burgers with Chris Morocco. Chris, would you consider yourself a veggie burger kind of guy?
I actually am. I am because, you know, sometimes when I'm in a situation where I'm not quite sure about the meat at the place where I'm eating.
Exactly.
I kind of get, you know, I feel like the veggie burger becomes the safest option.
Yeah, you're kind of at a random place where you're like, it's not a bad restaurant, but like, what is this ground beef? Is it going to be frozen patty, like what's that situation? Where I always think like, if you get a decent enough veggie burger, then you hit the fixins bar.
The fixins,
yeah,
oh sure.
And you got
your pickly things,
your mayo-y things, and you can like if you're not vegan, you can throw some cheese on there.
Yeah.
And if you get a decent bun, all of a sudden, like you're in business.
It hits all the notes you kind of want it to, but without the kind of like the questions, you know, like the lingering, what was that? Worth it?
And I had that recently. I was in Buffalo with my wife and went to a certain restaurant that I've been itching to go to because it looked like this old kind of throwback sort of Anchorman sort of establishment where you were like in your bucket chairs having your scotch on the rocks that you prepare to the dining room. And I got a burger there and I'm like, it was just so bad and not cooked properly and not see. It was just like, and I just felt like a terrible human being for eating. Like at some point, I just stopped.
Yeah.
I'm eating this
That's
beef.
Horrible.
Like if you eat a burger, if you eat that much red meat, it should be delicious. But there is such thing as obviously as delicious veggie burgers. Can I say one thing?
Yeah, sure.
Can we rebrand it?
What should we be calling it?
Not veggie burgers. That's just the word. Can I get a veggie burger, please? I don't know. Like, I just feel like there should be a better name, like Alterna Burger or something. Just like the veggie burger thing.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the veggie burger and what that encompasses is so broad these days because under that banner, right, you've got the Impossible Burger and the Beyond Burger are technically veggie burgers.
Which are like kind of quote-unquote fake meat, or they're trying to approximate what meat,
real meat
tastes like in the texture and bleeding and such.
Completely. And then also then you have like, you know, whatever, you know, your black bean burger or your superiority burger style burger, you know, all of those things can be encompassed by veggie burger, but they're, you know, they're very different things and trying to achieve very different things, you know, an Impossible Burger versus a superiority style burger.
So maybe just be a bit more specific about what the ingredients are and brand your burger that way.
Yeah. Like, I think there's nothing wrong with calling something a black bean burger.
No.
Because
I like black beans.
You know exactly what that's going to be like, right?
I had black beans for lunch today. It was Taco Thursday at the Condé Nast cafeteria. And I'm like, oh, got some black beans, a little rice, sliced up an avocado in the BA kitchen.
Yeah.
And a little cucumber, and I had lunch.
Nice.
Okay. So, You've developed two burgers.
two veggie burgers, alt burgers.
Your more recent one was a headline that said a veggie burger recipe that doesn't have 15 ingredients for once. And this is on our Healthy-ish website, BeHealthy-ish.com. To be honest with you, it has never occurred to me to make a veggie burger. So what are the pitfalls and challenges and whatnot in making a veggie burger from scratch?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, you know, you brought up, you know, burgers that they apply to kind of restaurants and like where you want to order a burger and where the burger is going to be delicious. But, you know, there's a similar thing kind of at work with veggie burgers where, you know, making one at home, though, can be really hard because it's not like, oh, you can make yourself a regular beef burger at home, no problem. There's like two ingredients.
Yeah.
There's, you know, ground meat and there's salt, you know, so you're going to get something that you're probably pretty happy with. But when it comes to a veggie burger, you have to make a lot of choices, both from whatever recipe you decide to go with to the simple fact that vegetables do not want to come together in patty form and stay there, you know, without some serious manipulation. So when it comes to, okay, let's talk about like a black bean burger, which kind of, you know, that sort of direction inspired the, you know, the one that I did for Healthy-ish, that's, you know, the easiest ever grilled veggie burger, we called it. You know, that is very black bean forward. But the thing is, if you can't just put black beans into a bowl and start mashing and adding things because there's just way too much moisture trapped in those beans, you'll have, you know, kind of like black bean salsa before you get to anything that could be, you know, shaped into a burger and let alone grilled. So how you deal with all those ingredients and all of is what it's all about.
So you decided, all right, so black bean is your base, and what was your next step?
Okay, so with this one, I took two cans of black beans and a block of tofu. I shredded the tofu and I drained the beans
What kind of tofu?
Like extra firm tofu, like a block, you know, like the firmest stuff so that it'll have like the most texture after cooking. I shredded that and squeezed it because the problem with tofu is, you know, it has so much water in it that if you want to kind of use it in your kind of veggie burger mixture, you have to both squeeze a ton of water out of it, but you also then have to cook all the remaining water out of it. So the beans and the tofu go into a saute pan with some oil and they get cooked out hard, like until like the beans are kind of getting those kind of like cracked edges and sort of splitting open.
What sort of temperature are we on?
I think we're kind of at about medium high because you need to hit it with a lot of heat just to get all of that mass that's in that skillet kind of heated up and cooking.
And evaporate as much liquid as you can.
Exactly.
All right, so you do that, and are we mashing it together, or what are we doing?
Not yet. Okay. So then we have in a separate bowl, we found that almond butter was really useful at both as a binder and as a way to add a ton of kind of umami flavor to it. In the previous veggie burger that I'd done for us, you know, we pulsed our own roasted cashews to kind of get a bit of a similar effect. But almond butter, you know, because it has like kind of reached that more liquid, you know, fluid state, really works as a binder. And obviously you can just buy it as is. So that mayonnaise, grated garlic, chili powder, salt, go into a bowl and get mixed together. So that becomes this kind of like pasty slurry.
But a lot of flavor.
A lot of flavor, yeah. You know, fat. You know, that's a big thing with veggie burgers. You know, you've got to get some fat and some kind of juiciness in there. That's going to stay present even after you cook that burger.
In the same way that fat is what's satisfying about a beef burger, that if you have too lean of a burger, you're like, eh, that was okay. But you have a nice 20% burger fat, you're like, ooh.
Great balance.
Yeah, nice on your, that mouthfeel.
The mouth, yeah.
Could I have used garlic powder instead of garlic, fresh garlic?
Yeah, you could use garlic powder. And then that kind of comes together in the bowl. We're doing a little bit of mashing, but then we're adding some cooked quinoa. It could be any kind of cooked grain.
Let me ask you a question about this. A lot of times when you cook quinoa, after you drain it, the quinoa is very wet. What do you do to sort of get the quinoa to sort of dry out, not be all wet and mushy? Because anytime I make quinoa, it's always mushier than I want it to be.
This may surprise nobody, but I'm very particular about the way I cook my quinoa, Adam.
Okay, so what do? You're boiling it?
I boil it like pasta.
Yeah.
Okay, and when
it's
tender.
You add it into already boiling hot salted
water. Or I bring it up together. Okay. It doesn't really make much of a difference. But yeah, basically boiling it hard in salted water until it's tender. I then drain it. I add it back to the pot. And then cover it.
The pot without the water.
Without the water.
Okay.
Yep. The empty pot, but it's still hot.
Yeah.
So it continues to drive moisture out of the quinoa. You get the condensation on the underside of the lid. Just dump that off. And what you're left with is very fluffy, kind of slightly steamed out, and very distinctly grained quinoa.
Wow. I'm confused. Why not? Because I know when I do mashed potatoes, I always learn, especially if you overboil your potatoes a little bit, put them back in the dry pot over heat, and they will, all that steam will evaporate and that extra liquid potatoes will dry out.
Like you dry them out.
But you have the top off. Why not have the top off with the quinoa?
I mean, I guess you could. It's just a matter of not wanting, it has that hull on it, you know, it has that little bit of bran or hull or whatever you want to call it. That can very quickly kind of like get like kind of crispy, crunchy, which we kind of use to our advantage in this recipe, in that, you know, that kind of mashed into the burger mixture is going to pick up a lot of texture when it's on the grill, right? Mm-hmm. So it kind of adds back a little bit of that sort of like lacy meaty edge.
But you're getting ahead of us.
So you could put it over the heat. It just, it may go a little bit fast on you, and you may start to get some crispiness.
Right. So you want some nice fluffy, dried, not moist,
dried out
quinoa.
Kind of,
You got your slurry, which you said, which I like, with the cashew butter. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you've got your beans and your tofu, which are just in the pan, off the heat.
Yep.
You haven't done anything with them yet.
Nope. Okay. Those have kind of dried out, and they become like a very big part of the body and substance of the burger. And the last two things that then go in are flaxseed meal.
No idea what that is.
Flaxseeds, just blitzed up.
Okay.
No problem.
Do I have to blitz them or do I buy them?
You can buy whole seeds, you know, if you want. But yeah, you find flaxseed meal like any grocery store, with some water. So that's kind of like our alt egg in this, because the thing is, you know, like I can't remember if Brooks has egg. I guess he doesn't have it in the Superiority Burger. But you find egg and or, you know, kind of breadcrumbs and all kinds of other binders in a lot of veggie burgers.
Which is a common thing on meatloaf or meatballs or whatever, you know, a lot of times people add an egg just to bind.
It binds, you know? So like as that mixture heats up, it creates those proteins in there, you know, kind of create bonds that then helps kind of hold everything together. So flax achieves like a very similar thing because it has this kind of cool property, a little bit like chia where it forms a gel,
when introduced to water.
So like you'll put, you know, the flax meal with a little bit of water in a little bowl, and a minute later, it's like solid.
Oh, wow.
It's like, it kind of like, it forms this kind of cool goo. Well,
let me ask you a question. Could I use an egg instead of the flaxseed situation?
Yeah, I think you could. Yeah. I like, we didn't test it like that, but you absolutely could. Yeah.
Okay, so you got your flaxseed,
and then a little bit of cornstarch.
Cornstarch.
Just a little bit of insurance.
In that mixture.
Into that mixture.
Okay. Now do we just...
Sorry, into the big bowl with all that stuff. And then you're done. That's it. You have a mixture.
What do you mean I'm done?
You're done. I mean, this is the thing, you know, with a lot of veggie burger recipes, you know, at that point you've got to kind of form it into patties and then either freeze them or refrigerate them for hours.
So hold on a second. All right. So we've got our slurry, we got our little flaxseed jelly sort of situation. We've got the beans with the that have been cooked off with the tofu.
Yep.
We put that all in together. A big mix bowl, and then we just mix it up with our hands.
We mix it all up.
Get your kids involved, maybe.
Sure, yeah. You know? Give them a spoon.
And so at this point, you're not mashing the beans with like a potato masher. You're just doing those with your hands. And
you can kind of work it together just fine with your hands because a lot of those beans will have split open, you know, in the cooking process. And it's going to want to come together.
Okay. So as you're doing it, is there any, how do you tell whether it's balanced, whether it's coming together the way it should come together? Is there any sort of test you can do?
It's just going to want to hold together. Mm-hmm. So like you're going to pick up a kind of like a ball of it in your hand and it should feel like it wants to be solid and hold
and
together,
stay together.
You know,
you form the patties, do you then refrigerate them or anything?
You don't need to. Okay. No, this is like, that's the cool thing about this recipe. And that's why we really went, you know, kind of all in on this approach is that, you know, you can take that mixture and you can go right to the grill with it. And that is something that's not true of a lot of veggie burgers. So, you know, that was kind of the big benefit for us, you know, that for you, somebody who doesn't necessarily want to make a veggie burger at home, you know, and for anybody else who's in that same boat, like, I hear you. But, you know, there is a very streamlined way. You know, I think this really like kind of responds to the fact that, you know, yeah, like real, you know, ground meat is so easy, you know, if you're somebody whose family wants to eat, you know, meat burgers, that's cool, you know, but if you want an alternative, you don't have to like spend half a day making it.
Yeah. So, all right. So you form the patties. Now, do you salt the outside of the patties like you would a beef burger before you grill it?
No, all the salt is inside them. The only thing that you're doing, which kind of helps since it's a bit of a sticky mixture, is, you know, you coat your hands with olive oil.
Really?
Which kind of helps the patties from sticking to your hand. But then also that oil then helps them kind of take on like a little bit of char and a little bit of color on the grill.
All right, let me ask you this.
Yep.
Did you test this patty also like in a cast iron skillet and compare how it cooked on a skillet compared to like a grill?
We did, yeah. Because we ended up with like a lot of like, you know, various iterations of this mixture. We did, we cooked some of it like in a cast iron skillet, which honestly worked just fine. I'm not going to say it's like it's better on the grill or in a skillet, but you kind of have options with this.
Yeah.
And the other thing about, you know, a lot of veggie burgers in general is, you know, not including ones that you might buy from a supermarket kind of already frozen and ready to go, is that like when you try to grill them, they fall to pieces.
Oh, I've seen that before.
Yeah.
All right. So then how do you like to dress it up fixing wise? Like what goes well with this flavor profile of the veggie burger itself?
So because like, especially with a black bean burger, you know, which this is one, you know, you get like, it's a lot of big flavor, like that bean flavor, especially when it's kind of had the heat of the grill on it, is like very deep, very rich, very intense. So you need something really bright to kind of, you know, wake it up a little bit. So pickled red onions, real solid pickled jalapenos, I will never say no to on a burger of any kind. We did like a kind of just a stir together kind of yogurty, like Chipotle yogurt, just like that liquid in the Chipotle and adobo can, the Chipotle itself, but just that
sauce,
just like incredible sauce. A couple of tablespoons of that and a cup of whole milk Greek yogurt with a little bit of salt.
I really like
dynamite.
How they do at Hearts in Brooklyn.
Oh,
they
have
the lamb burger, and then they do the
aioli.
The Greek yogurt. I thought they did like a Greek yogurt. Aioli?
I thought it was like more of like an aioli thing, but there might have some yogurt in it.
I know there's dill involved.
Yeah, there's like all those herbs.
I
mean, that's one of the cool things. I don't even like lamb, and that's a great burger because of like the treatment, you know? And I think that's the thing. It's
the
like
fennel, and they got the fennel going on.
Mm-hmm,
and
that like cool salad. So I think, you know, this is at the end of the day, you know, once you have a patty, you know, veggie burger patty, or even like if it's like meat, you know, that's like your starting point, you know? And for me, I always kind of crave those add-ins, those things that kind of lift, like add some acidity, add some crunch, you know,
like good slaw, good acidic, like limey sort of slaw. And this would be nice.
Love.
Did you, all right, now you are not a vegan. But
no.
You appreciate a veggie burger. Did you put cheese on this burger?
I did a couple times.
Yeah.
I guess I just sort of crave it.
Yeah.
You know, it was something the previous veggie burger I'd done, the ultimate veggie burger. You know, I put cheese in it as well as on it.
That's banana.
You know, it's just, it takes a lot, you know, looking at like that recipe now, you know, the ingredient wise, it looks a little bit crazy, but there's truly a reason why all those things are in there, you know, and looking at the superiority burger, there's a lot that has to go into creating, you know, an assemblage of legumes and vegetables and seasonings.
Well, the difference,
to like kind of get it to stay together.
The difference though, although I guess Brooks Eley has a cookbook out now, Superiority Burger, but when you go to the restaurant, someone's doing all that for you.
Oh,
so you don't
for sure.
care how many ingredients are in there.
Oh, completely.
They're slaving away for you and you can get theirs. I mean, I think what's interesting about the veggie burger at Superiority Burger is that originally, and I know he's gone through many sort of permutations of
yeah.
it, but it was kind of initially sort of meant, I would say, kind of meant to evoke that sort of In-N-Out Shake Shack-y,
oh, yeah.
Squishy potato bun, and there was like, yeah, you get cheese on it, and it was, even though it might have been a non-meat burger, it didn't necessarily come across as healthy, you know?
No.
It was just as indulgent and satisfying, and that's what's so cool about what Brooks has done at Superiority Burger, is like, okay, you know, this is delicious vegetarian food. This is not like diet food.
No. And yeah, I think he kind of like opened up this world where like that style of food was allowed to just be delicious and
yeah,
like
exactly.
in your face. And it's fantastic.
All right. Well, you got me hungry. So listeners, you can go to Healthiest, our website, or just Bon Appetit, and look up easiest ever grilled veggie burgers. Perfect for the grill. Or if you really want to get like 2.0, you can go to the, what's the other one called?
The Ultimate Veggie Burger.
Ultimate Veggie Burger, also by Chris Morocco a couple years ago. But Chris has evolved. He's a simpler man these days.
I am. I've had to make some hard choices.
Well, Chris, I'm hungry. Good job.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Thanks.
The Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced by Carrie Polis and Christina Che and produced and edited by Emma Wortsman. Our theme music is by Nathaniel Wortsman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.